just a rabbi, sold I to the merchant ships. Minutes after they took I from the bottomless pit, but my hand was made strong by the hand of the Almighty. We forward in this generation triumphantly. Won't you help to sing these songs of freedom? 'Cause all I ever have, redemption songs, redemption songs. Emancipate yourselves from mental slavery. None but a
wizard. Hello and welcome to episode 5 of Songs of Freedom. This is Matthew Boland speaking. This is part 2 of a conversation about women and the politic in music. We started out this conversation, at least podcast-wise, a few months ago with episode 4 of this series, and we divided this up, and we actually intended to get this second part out as early as last summer, but unfortunately a lot of things came up, especially in my own life, which led to a great delay. But here we are now, and this should be posted to Popdose in the middle of January 2013. Anyway, the discussion we're going to start into right now basically takes off where we did last time, where we're talking about certain female figures known for having a political stance, either through their music or their persona. And we're going to jump right into it with a discussion that Leanna and I had regarding Sinead O'Connor, Lauryn Hill, MIA, and a couple of other women who have very similar career arcs and trajectories. I hope you enjoy this.
Something that I think is important, because I'm remembering it from our last podcast, you were talking about having read, and I don't know who you were reading or who the critic was, who had commented that MIA was going the way of Sinead O'Connor, insofar as she was making some mistakes that were putting her in probably the wrong corners and creating a reputation that she likely would not want to have and that would likely sabotage her career. And in light of that, and we can go back to your point, but I think Sinead O'Connor factors into this conversation.
Oh yeah, absolutely, because she had arguably not only one of the best, but one of the most successful albums of 1990. And that is an album which actually you can say is actually comparative as maybe a midpoint link between something like Blue and 21.
Ah, good point. And there again, you're seeing sexuality, you are seeing vulnerability, and you're seeing femininity.
Oh,
but
yeah.
Expressed in a way that I think is so raw and so honest that I would even make the argument that a lot of these women don't have more mass commercial appeal because they're so intimidating in their honesty. I mean, somebody else might see that differently, but that's just me.
Well, I think maybe one of the problems, unfortunately, that sort of happened with maybe having more successful female singer-songwriters, at least in the 90s, was the fact that after Sinead became successful, I think I had stated, I think after we finished up our podcast and comparing, I think, MIA to Sinead, was that neither one of them seemed to be very good at having a really good detector about what, before they said something, whether or not it was brilliant or completely full of shit. And so the whole idea about the same thing which caused Sinead to say, maybe even if I'm angry at the Pope, I shouldn't rip up his picture on national TV, is sort of similar to, I don't know if I can point it to anything specifically. It seems that with MIA, she's more built up a reputation with things coming together, like the Super Bowl or the New York quote-unquote truffle fries incident.
Trufflegate.
Yeah, or the stuff that she said about Tamil Tigers, or, you know, what supposedly is going on regarding her and her absence from her kid. Those are all different things, and I think they form more of an amalgamation rather than the specific incidents that seemed to really disengage Sinead O'Connor in terms of the Pope picture or in terms of her refusing to let the national anthem be played when she was playing, I think, in the Meadowlands or something, or someplace in New
Jersey. Actually, you know, the thing is that now I'm seeing that she has, and this is definitely somebody we should speak about given the recent news, Lauryn Hill.
Oh, yes.
I see, these are two people who are, I think, very similar.
Yeah.
Who have made extraordinary contributions to pop music and to pop music by females specifically, who I, in my humble opinion, are geniuses of songwriting, who are totems of femininity because they are fearless in their expression of their womanhood, motherhood, sexuality, carnality, and at the same time, vulnerability and desire for men, mm-hmm. and who have, to some degree, paid a price for that.
Yeah.
And who I think society has shown up a lot because they have tilted towards a disregard for social mores, for admission of not necessarily always feeling like they were 100% in control of themselves. Whereas men have as many problems, to say the absolute least, and are never quite shown up that way, in my opinion. I think what's happening with Lauryn right now is unfortunate with the tax evasion thing. But, and as we saw in the BET Awards, she was mocked for it. Anyone who read this statement about that Lauryn made in response to her intentionally not paying United States tax can see that it's an extraordinarily well-thought, well-intended argument. And I mean, I know that a lot of, this is a very polarizing view, and I know a lot of people listening right now will disagree. But I think that it was a very, very honest depiction of what she thought was right.
Oh, yeah.
And in that way, I think she and Sinead O'Connor have a direct line towards each other. I find those two women to be kindred spirits. And they have had an extraordinary impact on me, as I'm sure they have had on a lot of people, and in particular a lot of women. And we can't discount their contribution to music. And yet at the same time, in the grand spectrum of all these artists that we've been talking about, whether it be the woman, the Call Me Maybe.
Jepsen, Carly Rae Jepsen.
But if you're looking at the spectrum of musicians, where does Sinead, where does Lauryn, where do Sinead and Lauryn fall? And why do you think that these women are probably not as popular as, say, a Madonna, who is roughly their same age group? Well, that's not true, actually. Lauryn would be significantly younger, wouldn't she? But none of these women are at the beginning of their career.
Right. A couple of things with Lauryn Hill. First of all, you know, while I don't agree with what she did, I do understand her statement, and in many ways it does make sense, even if it's informed by, I think it's sort of hard considering, it's sort of hard to, one of the other problems is that it's sort of hard to separate what she, like, her current statement and the, both the political and non-political nature of it, is hard to separate from some of her other more infamous behavior of the last decade or so. And so I think that tempers it or it feeds into the interpretation of it. And as I said,
and say the same thing of Lauren.
Yeah.
Well, no, I'm sorry, Sinead.
Yeah. I would also say that in terms of Lauryn Hill, I think that she is now sort of also, she's also been defined the same way as sort of what we're talking about with Liz Phair, which is the idea that this was somebody who was doing something exciting and revolutionary, and we were anticipating what was to come next. With Liz Phair, it was basically increasing levels of disappointment. With Lauryn Hill, it's basically been pretty much nothing, with the exception of the, in a lot of circles, now infamous Unplugged 2.0, there hasn't been anything. And I think, you know, that when you're dealing with a medium, especially a medium when one was as popular as she was, as much of a crossover artist as she was, and you're dealing with something which measures itself on the consumption of new product, it's a lot harder, unfortunately, I think, to put up with what gets proscribed as infamous behavior when there isn't additional product that goes along with it. Now, I think that it also is informed by the fact that she's female as well, because if you look at her behavior, how she's been reported, I think of her when the fact of the questions that have been about, like, her state of mind and her religious influences, and the fact that she now goes by in public, her official stage name is Ms. Lauryn Hill. It makes me think a lot of Prince and the fact that he changed his name to a symbol, and that he went from being a very sexual person who could balance his sexuality with his background as a Seventh-day Adventist, and now is becoming non-sexual Jehovah's Witness, and just the other weird types of things that give birth to Prince. And it seems that there's been a lot more tolerance of him versus similar things which have happened in Lauryn Hill's life in the last decade or so. And
okay.
I don't know how much of that is simply the fact of the difference of, like, legendary music Prince has put out compared to Lauryn Hill, or the fact that one is male and one is female, or the fact that even if it is middling compared to his classic stuff, that Prince continues to put out stuff, whereas Hill hasn't. But I don't think you can escape from the fact that one of those categories, which I did say, relies on the fact that there is a difference in sex between Hill
Absolutely.
And Prince.
Absolutely.
And, yeah.
And the other thing about that is that I don't think that Prince has ever, in the way that Lauryn Hill has, in the way that Sinead O'Connor has, disclosed being emotionally unstable. Whether that be, I mean, in the case of Sinead, she specifically has identified herself as being bipolar.
Mm-hmm.
She has had very, very public cries for help online, specifically through Twitter. I know that there have been at times, and I can think of at least one incident in which Lauryn Hill said that she was an absolute wreck on stage. What is it, and I know this goes into a more philosophical and non-musical realm, but what is it about the raw, vulnerable female artist that becomes unappealing from a musical perspective, from a commercial perspective?
I think it has something which goes back maybe centuries. And that's the concept of labeling female behavior which doesn't associate itself with expected norms as hysteria, whereas similar behavior in terms of masculinity is usually more accepted as something which is complex or artistic. And even in female artists, it's hard to separate these prescribed ideas of the hysterical from the artist, which is why somebody who is, like, really, really odd, like Salvador Dali, is really, at least in some circles, quite respected. But on the other hand, I think that the portrayal given of similar artists from the period like Frida Kahlo is there's usually a lot more talk about her being troubled compared to male counterparts who may have had these, you know, lived similar lives or had the same sort of political beliefs or things of that nature. And I think it's the prescription of these certain concepts of the female and the and of femininity and them being so ingrained that it's hard to deviate from those things. I mean, I don't think that there's an equivalent. I mean, when you think of the word hysteria, the only way I think of it as something which is not feminine is in the fact of it being a Def Leppard album title.
Well, I mean, that's understandable.
Yeah, but I believe that the background of the word hysteria, its derivation, has to deal with an imbalance within the female complex.
Well, it derives from the word uterus.
Yeah, exactly. And that whole idea, when you put it in its true terms of derivation, is very sexist and limiting. And the idea that these types of concepts have been put upon an entire sex, and you know that the female artist has to try to find some way to push past it at times compared to her male counterparts. And I think that's where you get the separation between what may be similar behavior in, say, a Lauryn Hill versus, say, a Prince.
It's funny because you just made a nice little circle there. I was just thinking that Sinead covered Nothing Compares to You.
Yeah, that is true. And that was back in a time in which Prince was secure with the concept of both masculinity and there being a feminine male. You remember he wrote this song at the same time that he was doing all of this stuff under the guise of Camille.
Right. Oh wow, I had completely forgotten about that.
I mean, the side three of Sign of the Times is basically the remnants of what was going to be the Camille release, along with a couple of other songs on Sign of the Times, like Housequake. But you know, it's interesting because even though it's listed as You Got the Look as a duet between Sheena Easton and Prince in the single, if you look, I believe, at the liner notes of Sign of the Times, it's listed as a duet between Sheena Easton and Camille.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
I should have picked up that album, damn it. You know, the thing is, you bring up something that I think is so interesting, and that's the idea that a lot of the artists that we've talked about, certainly the most successful ones, have a very good balance between the masculinity and the femininity. If you look at Madonna, she certainly wasn't afraid to flaunt more masculine traits.
Yeah.
And to really be, well, besides her exhibitionist tendencies, to also be very, very open and very showing of sexual orientation, of love for women, even lesbian images. With Sinead, you have a woman who at one point in her life identified as a lesbian,
right,
even though it was a very short period of time.
Mm-hmm.
I'm thinking about some of the women that we've talked about, like, well, not a woman, but the band L7. I'm thinking about Bikini Kill. I'm thinking about Karen Finley. You know, you don't own me, you asshole. You want to suck my pussy. Oh, I'm sorry. I just made this show not safe for...
We already had the explicit tag already on it, so...
Well, you know, if you're listening to Tales of Taboo, this is not safe anyway.
Right.
But, you know, that's a very, I think, aggressive, almost masculine song. These are women who have not been afraid to show an aggression that's really always been attributed or historically been attributed to males. And that's part of their allure. I would argue as well that it's part of what I think makes them, at least in some cases, maybe with the exception of Madonna, not so consumer friendly.
Yeah, I think a similar example also would be Courtney Love, who, when in her relationship with Cobain, I think was it sometimes just as being the one who wore the pants in the relationship. And actually, she was seen as the more aggressive, aka masculine persona at times in the relationship, and I think that was played to be one of the criticisms of her, but. She basically could give as good as it gets, especially in terms of the loudness and the aggression of the of Live Through This. You know, she softened herself up in terms of her image, or at least attempted to, with things like Celebrity Skin moving forward. But she was, at least for a period of time, definitely somebody whose image was tied up in what would be called the Riot Girl period of music.
Well, and I think that that's true of Peaches as well. I think, and conversely, I think there's also this phenomenon of women like, for example, Lisa Germano singing a song like the Dresses song, where she'll talk about, take me to your castle, it's so safe there, you make me want to wear dresses. I think there's this idea that when a woman is either A, very clearly cognizant of the male persona and how to wear it on herself, and B, very clearly cognizant of the male persona and willing to acknowledge it in terms of making a contrast to it, like in that song, creating such an obvious contrast that one can even look at that song and say, that's kind of overbearing, that's too female, but I think that that's very deliberate. I'm going to add another female, because there's so many females we can talk about. We could be talking all night. But here's another female that I think is excellent at being vulnerable and yet fiercely masculine, certainly a top 40 act, certainly a woman of great age now and who has never let down her respectability for one reason or another. And I think is important in this conversation. Grace Jones.
Ah. Yeah, she was in the news recently as well, at least among music aficionados, for her performance at the Diamond Jubilee.
I did not see her in the Diamond Jubilee. Tell me more.
She did, what's her, oh God, her probably her most well-known track.
I'm Not Perfect, Slave to the Rhythm.
Slave to the Rhythm. She did Slave to the Rhythm. Basically looking and sounding exactly as she did, still now in her 60s, as she did when she recorded it in her 30s, and throughout the entire performance, nonstop, hula hooped.
I love her so much. She did not hula hoop.
She hula hooped nonstop. It never fell during the entirety of her performance of that.
Jesus Christ.
Yeah. You know who else came out with
it? You're going to make me want to see that now.
Yeah, I know that's what you're going to YouTube as soon as we're done here.
I'm YouTubing it now.
Okay.
But I won't play it right now.
I would say from a similar aspect, somebody who is somewhat similar. Actually, you could say that they're the 180 degree opposite, but you know, emotionally are actually very similar to somebody else who's come out with an album within the last year. And has the respect of a lot of female artists, including Near Obsession by Courtney Love, and that would be Stevie Nicks. You always felt, even in her most vulnerable, even her most emotional times, that there was still this idea of strength and self-empowerment that was not going to be, if not diminished, then removed. And it seems that she's basically continued to be very forthright and to, you know, say how it is that she feels. And she's been one of the keys I've always thought is the fact that as a songwriter, I don't know if she actually knows how to play an instrument. She basically has the music in her mind and is able to dictate it to the band, but she's pretty much a lyricist. And in a ways, there is sort of this idea of her almost as a poet or a writer, as a songwriter. And there's an inherent strength that sort of intertwines itself in all of that, I found. And while she has a distinctly different following than Grace Jones and a different type of musical persona in total, there does seem to be a similar type of strength that I see from both of them.
Yeah, no, for sure. Huh. Well, we said a mouthful. I mean...
Oh, and also, Grace Jones, I think, didn't she, in A View to a Kill, didn't she play somebody who was had a voodoo background? And Stevie Nicks, I believe, has always identified herself as a witch. Or associated herself with Wiccanism.
That's a very... Okay, so now this is the second circle we've drawn tonight. No, I'm thinking actually, like, I don't remember exactly what the background was. But I know that very early on in her career, Grace Jones appeared on a talk show and actually beat someone up. I'm not kidding. And, again, it's something where you think this is a woman who was absolutely fearless. And you wonder what her place in her... Because if you're going to look about... If you're going to look at women and their place in music, I mean, I would not... I would not cross Grace Jones. nor would I cross Madonna, but I find that Grace Jones has had such a great market appeal. Again, for a lot of the same traits that we've talked about. Raw sexuality. An extraordinary balance between the femininity and, again, the masculinity. The strength, this ability to balance these two things. I mean, if you look at her, she does have an androgynous quality, mm-hmm. yet no one would argue that she's not supremely feminine.
Right.
Is it because she's so exotic and so in control that she presents more respectability than, say, a Sinead O'Connor, or even now I would argue a Lauryn Hill to some extent, given her Lauren's problems? And then contrast that with the whole idea of what we were talking about and Madonna, who exhibits a lot of those traits, but perhaps is, you know, and is also very feminine, but has been maybe more commercially appealing from a top 40 perspective. I don't know.
I'd say that actually this brings in yet another circle, because I think that actually Grace Jones has some levels of overlap with Lady Gaga, because they both use performance art in connection with music. They both have this concept of the androgynous, one from Grace Jones' just the general persona and the way that she dressed in suits with the flat top, things like that, compared to Lady Gaga, who it was rumored had a penis and never completely played it down. In fact, played it up at one point in one of her videos. And and the concept of actually incorporating things of a political nature. And actually that also gets me back to the thing about a comparison between Lady Gaga and Adele, because with both of them you've had these immensely successful artists who in both cases there have not been these type of copycat signings and promotions in their wake that you would expect from the record industry in general. And you have Adele, who's more of the traditional singer-songwriter, and then you have the more political artist in terms of Lady Gaga. And in both those cases, in terms of both, it's interesting how, while one is more traditional and the other one has more which you would think would be quote-unquote too hot to handle, there, once again, it comes down to the idea of what is it with the more mature female musical artist in this day and age where there isn't, it just doesn't seem to me that there's a rush to find the next version of them like there is with younger artists, or there even was with grunge artists. Regardless of whether or not they are generally seen as controversial or political or not, it just...
Well, I think I'll try again to take a crack at that. I think that just as the music industry is flailing to get its head above water in the day of the MP3s, it's also trying to grapple with a post-sexual liberation age. Mm. And by that I mean, you know, it is no longer novelty, as clearly evidenced by Madonna's latest ploy to grab headlines, to just show skin, to be really open about wanting to perform sex acts or being completely carnal. This has been done. This is no longer shocking. And to the degree that we've seen the proliferation, not just of musicians, but even of quasi-celebrities like Kim Kardashian and Paris Hilton and the like, who have filmed sex tapes and have, in some to some degree, justified that as the acts of someone who's sexually liberated, as opposed to someone who just looks like they're selling themselves on the cheap. This is a dichotomy that I think only now we're beginning to grapple with. When we're presented with these touchstones, and by touchstones, I'm looking specifically at Madonna and Grace Jones before her. I'm looking at Sinead and I'm thinking of Lauren, who present a wide spectrum of not just carnality, of not just sexuality and liberation, but also of vulnerability, of honesty. The music industry still doesn't really know how to handle it, how to market it, and how to propagate it, and how to specifically package it to the audience at wide, and maybe even I would bring that down to a male audience. It's very easy to sell beer. It's very easy to sell a woman in a crop top drenching herself under a waterfall. It's not so easy to move units of beer if you're talking about a woman who is presenting things in a socio-political context and who isn't afraid to discuss her sexuality, her orientation, to be crass and to be vulnerable and to be brutal and honest, and at the same time admit that she caters to the masculine and wants a man to love her or like her at the very least. It's all too complex at this point in time for what I think is a dying record industry. And time will tell if that becomes a thing that audiences veer to. I like to look at the examples of Adele before her Annie Lennox. I think actually Annie Lennox reminds me a lot of Adele.
Oh yeah.
That is women true. Who are very strong but are also very feminine and are singing towards the need, or at least at one time the dependency of a man, are a kind of segue into a more liberated woman as pop diva. And I guess that's where we're headed, and I'm optimistic towards it. But in the meantime, that industry will fight it. And they will fight it because you are hostile towards the unknown. And what we know, what we're comfortable with, what we know sells units, is what sells Budweiser. Scantily clad women under white wet t-shirts saying they want you is never really that hard to market.
Unfortunately, it does seem that at times there's this interlink between female artists who are like asked, like, oh, what do you think of so-and-so? And it's like they're another female artist, you know, and that's basically a lot of what they have in common. So it becomes problematic as though it's like, if you say the wrong thing, then you end up looking bad, but there was really no reason for you to have had an opinion on them to begin with, except for the fact that somebody said, hey, you're both of the same sex, what do you think of this?
I mean, I think that's leveled on black and brown and minorities.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, you can't snitch on your own, and I don't know if that's necessarily something that the artists in question have done.
Yeah, I think what I was basically getting to is one thing which becomes problematic, and I think it is just in terms of being able to actually allow oneself to be critical. That's one thing that, and I'm leading towards a specific example. One thing which actually, not only was there the example I was not really good at giving of female artists being asked, well, what do you think of this person who just happens to be another female musician? But also the idea, which was specifically problematic to me, which led back to Liz Phair and how she wrote an article, I think it was for USA Today, in response to the fact that she couldn't write a longer article for Rolling Stone, asking what she thought of Lana Del Rey, who is another one of these. Well, I'll get back to it. But the problematic thing, and I think that this is, I don't know if this is the same thing that a male artist would face, but it did seem problematic to me the fact that Phair said in her article, it wasn't so much the fact that she was supporting Lana Del Rey, but the fact that she was supporting her because she was a female who was saying something. And she and Phair wrote something along the lines of, it doesn't matter whether or not what they're saying is smart or stupid, as long as they're female and they have a voice. And I don't think that's the type of standard that one would want.
It's a very blunt standard, and I can understand why people would have a problem with it. But I also think that it's just reactionary, and unfortunately, to some degree, true that in today's and with today's backlash, I think, against minorities, against women, against the war on, I mean, when you think about the war on women, as I would term it, there is a human tendency to form allegiances.
This is true.
And that, those allegiances become, we don't snitch on our own. We protect our own, whether we see eye to eye or not. There has to be some sense of solidarity, and we are not going to allow the oppressor to subdivide us any more than they already have. Divide and conquer will not proceed, will not continue, and will not prevail, because that's part of the strategy. So I didn't read the article, so I'm only responding to what you're telling me.
Right.
I would say that was the right approach, even though that may have sounded a bit brass and maybe even a bit oversimplistic. I can understand her point.
The thing that really gets me, and it really leads back to, and I really should say something about Lana Del Rey, because that was one of the first things I think I talked about when I was composing this episode, but it seems problematic to me that all of this energy in terms of the record industry, and this is where I get back to exactly why there seems to be some sort of problem with the record industry with me when it comes to women, and the promotion of, is that the fact that while there's been a heck of a lot of buzz critically generated by Fiona Apple, and she's been able to go on places like Late Night with Jimmy Kimmel and being able to promote it, and she is in the public eye, it seems that there was a lot more money and energy that was thrown behind somebody like Lana Del Rey than was thrown behind the new Fiona Apple or has ever been thrown behind PJ Harvey. And I just really feel that regardless of male or female or whatnot, that there needs to be some real problem that I have, and I don't know if you, what you thought of the track that I included on the playlist, or you've heard anything else from Born to Die, which is Lana Del Rey album, but
I wasn't able to listen to that one, unfortunately.
Oh, you weren't? Okay. But the thing that always got me wasn't just the fact that the story was that her name's not Lana Del Rey, and it's not just the fact that basically the name was given to her as a suggestion by marketers, and her father is involved in marketing. And it's not just the calculating nature of creating a persona in order to promote what is supposed to be a singer-songwriter, But the idea that in order to be successful, that the persona that she was given is the one that she ended up with. As I told you in our conversation, I couldn't pinpoint exactly what is it that Lana Del Rey is supposed to be. What is it about the persona that she is being promoted in, the image that she's giving, that is going on here? Because I don't see what the connection is that she's jumping off of from other things which are currently occurring, which would necessitate this need to have her signed and promoted. And then it hit me. She is promoting the concept of what would it be like if all of these debutantes, like Paris Hilton and Kim Kardashian, who as part of their promotional effort actually record singles or albums, actually were decent singer-songwriters. And you actually have something which I don't think has ever occurred, which I can at least say is unique, which is debutante rock. And and it's perfectly summed up by, if you listen to the album, talking about, and I don't know why it irritates me so much, is that, actually I do know why it irritates me so much. So let me say it. This is the person, first of all, there doesn't seem to be enough separation for me. There needs to be something that if there's an image and there's artifice, that I know kind of where the art ends and the artifice begins. And in this, it seems that it's an entire package. Whether or not it's the controversy of the video for National Anthem, in which her and ASAP Rocky, you know, are playing a black and white version of John and Jackie Kennedy, or whether or not, like, oh, the aspect of her background, whether or not it's a weakness or a strength, and then the fact that she, like, even before she even played a live show, got on as a musical guest on Saturday Night Live and apparently did horribly,
according to all the reviews.
And then she got these pats on the back for then doing actual live shows and improving, when by all means and measure, that's not how it's supposed to happen. That's not how the pattern is supposed to happen. Even with, I also found it ironic, is the concept of debutante rock in that video for National Anthem. She's playing Jackie Kennedy, who was Jacqueline Bouvier, who was, in the 1950s, a debutante. There's just something about creating the persona of basically, what if one of the Gossip Girl characters was really into Tori Amos and wrote her own songs? And then she delivers them in a combination in which she varies between these breathy Julie Cruz doing the Twin Peaks soundtrack and Betty Boop. And is she making a statement? What statement is she making? I don't know, because as I said before, I don't know where the art ends and the artifice begins, especially when you have the reality of having a persona actually created via marketing. And for me, it's separate from the issue of whether or not it's female or male. And it's sort of disheartening to me, just beyond the fact that actually I simply find her album irritating, regardless of the fact that it seems that at least a plurality, perhaps, of reviews of it had said it's at least pretty good. But the fact is that, why is Lana Del Rey worth pushing, marketing the hell out of, from a standpoint of, I believe she's signed to one of the major labels, CBS Records or something like that.
Okay.
And why is this marketed, constructed persona that has a link to, more of a link to reality shows than other forms of successful or even desired music? At least in my opinion, versus why would a record label do this instead of trying to find the next Adele and trying to find the American version of Adele?
Well, it goes back to what I was, I think I was trying to answer that question before. And it's the fact that ultimately I believe that the record industry is dying. It's in its death throes given the proliferation of MP3s, the evasiveness of formulaic marketing, and now you have a kind of reticence towards accepting what is really in a very dynamic and rapid and unforeseen level of change with regards to what is marketable. And obviously this is more a philosophical and socio-political argument, but I think as long as those companies retain any kind of power, and they still do, they're going to try to look towards older formulas, more accepted formulas of marketability.
I think basically, you know, what you're saying is that I think it is true that we're basically stuck, unfortunately, looking at not just female acts, but almost all acts basically being marketed or given to us by a record industry that is still stuck in the traditional ways of marketing. And, you know, like the idea of debutante rock, you know, it may be unique, but it's the concept is that something like that with a connection to, you know, reality television or other different types of media is something that does exist. So it's just like, well, why don't we make some sort of parallel synergy between that and music? And that in itself seems to be a much more palatable idea of something that would work for the record industry than actually going out there and trying to find the next Adele playing an open mic night.
Well, I think I've heard these whisperings through the grapevine that A&R as a career has been killed off. A lot of people who were traditionally employed in that are no longer being recruited. It makes sense because the revenue just isn't there. So I'm guessing, and again, this is simply guessing because I don't have any evidence to support it, but if you are in an industry that continually and consistently loses money year after year, you're going to pull those resources and that revenue towards formulas that you think have won in the past and have consistently raked in the money. That being said, well, scandal rakes in cash, notoriety rakes in cash, celebrity rakes in cash, and if you can throw together two or three different mediums, well, be it television, radio, and at the same time social media together, and produce it cheaply via a reality TV show, you've got, at least in the short term, a cash cow. And I think that that's what the industry is doing. They're grabbing on to straws because at this point, they can't really see what the long term is for the industry because there, in my opinion, simply isn't a long term.
Yeah. And with Lana Del Rey, another thing that the industry actually did was to try to leap onto a similar bandwagon that had procured success previously, which is that they had her debut videos on YouTube as if they were homemade things, even though they weren't. They were done with the backing of the industry. But it was in connection to the concept of the idea that one can become a celebrity on YouTube. You know, Justin Bieber was discovered by a YouTube video. Even bands, classic bands, when they replace singers now, like Boston and Journey, have gotten their new singers by looking at tribute bands on YouTube and plucking the singer and making them the actual singer of the band.
Yeah, so there is that sense. And look at Blur, just the other day, or just a couple of days ago, they released their new singles via Twitter. So it is this need. I'm seeing these bands who are traditionally, who have become or have grown accustomed to working with the old model, try to depend upon the new model to market their songs. Whereas I think in the end, I think what will prove to be the successful formula is simply the talent, the dichotomy between a person who is expected to go one way and goes another, whether that be via gender roles, which I think is a very easy tract in which to play that marketability, or be it something else like sexual orientation, like an Adam Lambert, which, I mean, it's maybe fodder for a different episode. But that is important. I think that complexity and a deviation from the mainstream and a challenge of social mores has always been at the forefront of what makes a female musician not just palatable, but iconic. Again, look at Liz Phair with her one, you know, standout album, Exile in Guyville. Look at Madonna's trajectory. Look at Grace Jones' trajectory. And look at Lauryn Hill. Perfect examples of people who have challenged the media, who have challenged the industry, who have shown an intense amount of complexity in their music, who have shown vulnerability and strength that is atypical of women. I would add Sinead O'Connor. These are women who are iconic for a reason, and they will serve as the touchstones for the future musicians. It will not be Miley Cyrus or Demi Lovato.
I agree. And I think that's probably a good place for us to wrap it up. That
sounds good to me.
Yep, that was definitely a very conclusive statement, and I don't think I could have finished it off better. So, until next time, in the next episode of Songs of Freedom, this is Matthew Bolin with Leanna Fernandez saying thanks very much for listening, and we'll see you next time. Good night.
Good night, everyone.
Yo, remember back on the Bully when cats used to harmonize like... Yo, my men and my women, don't forget about the dean. This is not the most the king. Yo, it's about a thing.
Feel real good. Wave your hands in the air and lick two shots in the atmosphere.
Since you were looking for your friend, the one you let hit it and never called you again. Remember when he told you he was about to Benjamins? You act like you ain't him, they give him a little trim to begin. Now you think you really gon' pretend like you wasn't down and you called him again. Plus when you give it up so easy, you ain't even fooling him. If you did it then, and you probably can. Talking out your neck saying you're a Christian, a Muslim, sleeping with the gin. Now that was the sin that did Jezebel in. Who you gon' tell when the repercussions spin? Showing off your ass cause you thinking it's a trend, girlfriend. Let me break it down for you again. You know I only say it cause I'm truly genuine. Don't be a hard rock when you really are a gin, baby girl. Respect is just the minimum. But you still defending them now. Lauren is only human. Don't think I haven't been through the same predicament. Let it sit inside your head like a million women in Philly pen. It's silly when girls sell their souls because it's sin. Look at where you be in. Hair weaves like Europeans. Fake nails done by Koreans. Come again. In his Timbs and his women, him and his men. Come in the club, I come to dance. Don't care who that you.